the story of Ruth, I want to kind of get a setup, because Ruth is really, if you will, it's kind of a microscope into a specific story that happens inside of the book of the time period of the Judges. And so it's kind of a zeroing in or a narrowing in inside of the larger story of the scripture. So I want us to make sure that we line this up well. And particularly if you haven't been here for the story, I want us to kind of see the progression of what God is doing. So the story we've been working through is the story of the Bible, what God has done from Genesis through Revelation. And what is this overarching narrative of the scripture? So we start with God making the world, and he makes it good, and he loves us. He loves humanity so much that he places us in a garden and cares for us and gives us work to do that's good for us and says, I'm going to be with you and I'm going to love you. But that humans rejected that and we pushed God away. We call that sin. And that because of that, that there were consequences of that sinful decision. And that they got kicked out of the garden, but that God continued to give grace and favor to them, that they had children and that people multiplied on the earth. But that God was soon sad that he had even made humanity, and that he decided to start over with Noah and his family. So he creates a flood across the earth and starts over with Noah and his family. And again, the earth repopulates from him, and that his desire to bring humanity back to himself, he then starts over with a single man named Abraham. And he promises Abraham in his old age that he will have a child. And eventually that happens, not without problems, if you read the book of Genesis. But that eventually Isaac is born, and Isaac ends up having two sons, Esau and Jacob, and out of Jacob rises 12 sons, and those 12 become the foundation of the nation of Israel. Joseph gets sold into slavery by his brothers into Egypt, the second youngest, if you will, of Jacob's boys. But that in slavery that he becomes second in command to Pharaoh and ends up saving Egypt and his family from certain destruction in a famine. While his family is living in Egypt for over 400 years, Jacob's family, they become a great nation and they multiply greatly, but they also become enslaved by the Egyptians. And that their groaning under the pains of slavery come to the ears of God. And I love this text. It's so critical to understanding who God is in Exodus chapter 3, verse 7, that God has heard the cries of his people. He sees their affliction and he knows their pain. He sees, he hears, he knows. And then the final statement that he is coming down, he is going. And that incredible thing is that his going is through the person of Moses. And that he sends Moses to go and bring his people out of slavery. And we see these great works that God has done. And then he brings them out through the Red Sea and brings them to Mount Sinai and gives them rules to this is what it means to live as my people. And the people say, all right, we'll do these things. And they go, and God's promised this land, what we call modern-day Israel, that he's promised this land to this group of people, and they're on the doorstep to go in, and they say, we're not going. Those people are too big. We can't beat them in a battle. And so God says, all right, then you're going to walk in the desert for 40 years, and your children will be the ones that go in. And that under the leadership of Joshua, that the children of the generation that walked in the wilderness finally enters the promised land. So we talked about last week is where we left off, is that the generation of Joshua dies off and a generation is born that does not know the Lord, in Judges 2 that we studied last week, does not know the Lord nor what he has done for Israel. And that we talked about the responsibility of the transfer of the faith from one generation to the next, and that these kids up here, one of which is not paying attention at the moment and he's mine, he didn't catch on either. Hey, Noah, pay attention, man. But that these kids are important. Will back there is important. You're important because we need to hand off the faith one generation to the next to say this is what it means to live as God's people in the world. And that is our responsibility to hand off that faith. So here we are in this period of the Judges, as we said, these one generation does not know the Lord, and that this cycle that we see happens among the people, that they forget the Lord, they forget what he's done, they do not know him, and they fall into false worship, worship of other things. And that because of that, God does not provide favor in battle and puts them into slavery and servitude to the nations around them. They eventually cry out to the Lord and said, save us, please, this is horrible. And God sends a judge that is empowered by his spirit to deliver them out of slavery. While that judge is living, the people worship God. As soon as the judge dies, the cycle starts all over again. Some famous judges, as we talked about, Gideon and Samson, probably the two most famous ones. So here we are. It is in this period of time that Ruth happens, this period in which this cyclical nature of people forgetting God, being enslaved, and then calling out and God rescuing them, this is when Ruth occurs. I want to read a specific, actually, you know what? I'm going to hold off because I need to talk about the book of Ruth here for a minute. I want us to have two specific cautions about the book of Ruth. Because I've heard people talk about the book of Ruth in two ways that I think are actually not really what the author of the book of Ruth is trying to get at. The first one is this. We saw the story that I've heard the book of Ruth used to talk about friendship. That Ruth and Naomi are just great friends. And that this is a model of what friendship is all about. And that Ruth is just this exemplary friend to Naomi. I would say that that's probably not what the text is all about. And in fact, if you go to Ruth 1, and we're going to read this text in a moment, we're going to see that what Ruth is really about is exactly this text right here that just came up. Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. And this is the key part. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. This is a story of conversion, not a story of friendship. This is a story of Ruth seeing the work of God in Naomi's life and in her family's life and saying, I want a part of that. The second thing that I've heard, and in fact, I've heard really high-profile people talk about this book this way. And in fact, if you go to Oak Hill's website, the folks who created the story, this is the way they taught Ruth, and it kind of upset me. But that Ruth is not a romance story. So we have this situation in which Ruth and Boaz get married, and we have this idea that Boaz and Ruth just fell in love at first sight. If you take a look at Ruth chapter 2, this will not be on the screen, but I'll read it. This is Boaz and Ruth communicating to each other in Ruth chapter 2, verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter. Now listen, my daughter. Now, I don't know. I know a number of gentlemen in this room have courted women in their lifetime, right? I doubt the first time you met your now wife that you said, hi there, my daughter. Right? Boaz was not thinking this is eligible material for me to marry. More than likely, Boaz is already married, probably already has children. It's referenced later in the text that he is older than Ruth, significantly so. And so that this is not some like amazing romance novel that you're expecting to pick up off the shelf of Walmart and go, whisk me away. That's not what Boaz and Ruth are about. There's something else here, and that's what we need to get into. So let's read this text. I'm going to be in Ruth chapter 1. We will eventually get to Ruth 4 to tie the whole thing together, but let's start in Ruth 1, and then we'll go from there. If you were able, will you stand with me? I know we don't do this often, but I would like to do this morning. If you were able, would you stand with me to honor the word of the Lord? I'm going to be starting in Ruth 1, verse 16. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said, no more. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? And she said to them, do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? So Naomi returned And Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. This is the word of the Lord for the nurture and admonition of his people today. Thanks be to God. Amen. You may be seated. Thank you. I really want to focus in on the narrative of Naomi, which quite honestly, the basis of this book actually has more to do with Naomi than it does Ruth or Boaz. Ruth and Boaz are actually, if we take a look at the greater narrative of the text, are actually used of God to do something for the life of Naomi. You might be asking me, I just kind of debunked two theories about why someone would write this book. The general consensus, actually, as we get to the end, is we talk about Obed, who is the son that is born to Boaz and Ruth, becomes the grandfather of David. To think about why Ruth would be written, I want us to think this way. More than likely, the text of Ruth was written during the lifetime of King David. Now, someone somewhere along the way probably saw political favor in picking on David about the fact that there was a foreigner in his bloodline. A Moabite woman, a non-Israelite, is the great-grandmother of the king of Israel. If you don't believe that that doesn't get used to political advantage, I want you to go back and look at some news clippings from about 10 years ago when President Obama was running for office. Wait a minute, this guy really isn't an American, is he? Oh, he was born in Hawaii, but his father is from Kenya, right? Yeah. So to think that it's happening today still, he's not a purebred American, whatever that means, but that David is not a purebred Israelite. There's this foreign woman in his background. And so that this story of Ruth, the story of how great of a woman this woman really was, needed to be told. Because this wasn't just some foreigner. This was a foreigner who had impeccable character and served the Lord in ways that, quite frankly, had not been seen in Israel. So let's jump into it. Naomi, let's talk about this text. So Naomi goes, and her husband Elimelech and her, there's a famine in the land, and they go from Bethlehem to Moab, which is to the east. And they go, and they are there for a while, and they find daughters or wives for their sons, and that Elimelech dies, and 10 years later, both of the sons die. As we just heard in the video. Naomi has this decision now. What are we going to do? Am I going to stay here or am I going to go back? She hears there's food. All right, we're going to go back. And that this is the critical decision, the first one that we see that Ruth's character is impeccable. What she does is amazing. Because the two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, I believe her name was. Yes, Orpah. Make sure I had the right name in there. Orpah are given this option by Naomi. You may go back to your father's home. And if you go back to your father's home as a childless widow, your father will find you another husband. This is important. Primarily because having children was where women had value in society in their days. So what they were saying was Naomi's saying to her daughters-in-law, I'm giving you the right to go and have a life for yourself. I'm giving you the right to go and make something of yourself and to be a valuable contributor to society. Go back to your father's home. It's the good thing to do. And you can be responsible and be respectable in society by going and getting a husband and having children. And that this is what Naomi is urging them to do. And Ruth says, no, I'm going with you. There's something about this God that I'm following. So I'm sticking with you, Naomi. And she comes to town. They go back. Orpah leaves. Naomi and Ruth come back to town. And this is the key piece that we need to focus in on because this is where it's going to rub in on our lives. In verse 19, the end of verse 19, it says this, the women of the town, the whole town was stirred because of them coming back. And the women said, is this Naomi? This is an important statement. The word Naomi means pleasant. It means pleasant. It's kind of a nice name sometimes. For example, if you've ever met an Irene means peace in Greek. if you've met a Sophia, that means wisdom. And so that her name, Naomi's, her parents thought she was a pleasant girl. And so they named her Pleasant. And so the women's question is actually quite interesting, because if we read the word pleasant in place of Naomi, is that she comes back from her long excursion in Moab, and they ask, is this pleasant? Is this pleasant? Is this nice? Oh, it's so great they're back. We should throw a party. And Naomi comes back powerfully against them and says, do not call me pleasant. Call me Mara. And the word Mara means bitter. Do not call me pleasant, but call me bitter. Hey, Asher, can you give me your bitter face again, buddy? There we go. Thank you. So we had our actor and actress up here earlier. That Ava was our nice pleasant face. Thank you, Ava. She's waving again. Thank you. And Asher was our bitter face. But that Naomi went from, in other words, Naomi, as she comes, has gone from Ava's pleasant smile to Asher's bitter lemon face. Right? And that this is the key thing, is that she's placing the blame for her bitterness on the Lord himself. The Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. I'm sure that you all have met someone at some point in time who said, I don't like God because he's done this to me. What they're really saying is exactly what Naomi is just saying. Don't call me pleasant any longer. My life stinks because God has done stinky stuff for me. Right? My guess is that we ourselves probably don't even recognize some of the bitterness that we hold in ourselves. Things that I hold grudges about, and I go, God, why didn't you do something different? Maybe it was a loved one that you felt was taken away from you prematurely. A pregnancy that just didn't end well. A teenage child taken in a car accident. Maybe it's a job situation. Why was I the one that got laid off? God, why have you dealt bitterly with me? Now, God's got big enough shoulders to handle those types of things. But that the question is why is Naomi placing the blame for that on God's shoulders? Why do people? I remember I had a gentleman that I worked with in the playground factory that I worked at in Pennsylvania. And that he had a good friend of his in high school who died in a car accident. And two things happened out of that. The first thing was that he refused to get his driver's license. He was a 15-year-old kid when his good friend that was 2 years older than him died in a car accident. And I talked with him about this on the floor of the playground while we were working. He was an interesting gentleman. He was 2 years younger than me. But that he refused to get his driver's license because he was so terrified of being in an automobile accident. But the second thing was, is that he found out I was studying to be a minister, and he said, I will never step foot in a church again, because if that is what God does, I want nothing to do with them. He was bitter over the fact that his friend had died. Think about it. What happens to your face when you eat a lemon? Noah's going to be my model. There you go. So Noah exemplifies bitter face. And you get this, the drawn, and did you notice his shoulders come up? And that everything became tense. Ugh. And that when we hold bitter grudges against people and against God, our souls do this. And that we hold it and we become bitter. Now, this is the incredible thing, and I hope that if you're dealing with a bitterness in your life right now, that God's going to speak to you through a couple of things in this text today. Because Ruth and Boaz do something incredible. Ruth and Boaz become the hands and feet of the Lord. That first, as I already mentioned, that Ruth makes this decision to follow Naomi. That she says, there's something about this God that I want to follow, and I'm going to come alongside of you, and I'm going to take care of you. As I already mentioned, the good thing, the normal thing, the beneficial thing to society was for Ruth to go back to her father and go get another husband. But she decides, no, I'm going with you. And what she does is she rejects what is good, being a beneficial member of society, whatever that means, going and getting a husband, and she chooses what is best. She says, I'm going to model the heart of God, and I'm going to give of myself to see someone else benefit. So Ruth goes, and then we see the same thing with Boaz. As already mentioned, this was not a romantic story. This wasn't Boaz falling head over heels for Ruth, but rather, Boaz has the right to reject marrying her and being completely within the confines of not just what is okay by the law of God, but actually what normal people would think this is the right thing to do. If you know the story, it does not go with it in the video, but if you see, Boaz needed to go and talk to a guy who had the first right to purchase the property and to marry Ruth. And that if he, when he goes and talks with the guy, he says, oh, I'll buy the land. And he says, oh, but then you need to marry Ruth and you need to take Naomi as well. And he says, oh, I can't do that. And he says this, it's going to jeopardize my own inheritance. So what he's saying, let's put this in today's world, is what he's saying, because of the way the whole thing works, is that you're supposed to raise up an heir to the dead man, so the dead man's name does not end forever. But what ends up occurring is this man says, you know what? I need to take care of my son and my grandsons. Seems like a reasonable thing to do, right? If someone's going to ask you what's an important thing for you to do, you say, I need to take care of my family. I need to take care of my sons, my grandsons, and make sure that they're set up in life, that they're ready to go, that they're not going to have any problems when I die because they're set up and ready to go. We do those types of things. And that this was a... From all intents and purposes, this is the way that society works. We go, of course, we need to make sure that the inheritance is there and that our children and our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren have no problems whatsoever, that they can just ride off into the sunset and remember the great legacy that we as the grandparent left behind, right? That's what we do. And so what this man did by rejecting marrying Ruth, by normal worldly understanding of what is right and wrong, made the right choice. But Boaz, by accepting it, rejects the good to accept God's best. And in so doing, is an instrument of God bringing about something amazing. So Ruth and Boaz both make these decisions that are against the normal wisdom of the world that says this is what's good and accepts what God's best is, and that in so doing that they end up having a baby. They get married. They have a baby. And that this is so great. Let's take a look at Ruth 4, because this is where we need to land today. I think I'm going to read from verse 13. I doubt that will be up on the screen, but I'm going to read from verse 13 and go on. Yeah, verse 17. So you can follow on the screen when I get to verse 17. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went in, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women, remember it is the women that said, is this pleasant? So notice it is the women who are naming here. Then the women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. This is the interesting piece of this verse, starting verse 17. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name. I don't know about you, but if Heather and I are ever blessed with another child, I'm not asking my next door neighbor what to name my boy. Okay? And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name. saying, "A son has been born to Naomi," and they named him Obed. Now, again, this is kind of one of those things that gets lost in translation, but the word Obed means praise. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. You see, the work, when we become the hands and feet of Jesus to another person, it ends in praise. When we become the hands and feet of Jesus for the sake of another, it ends in praise. It ends in the birth of something new in which God receives the glory and the honor forever and ever for. That Naomi isn't praised for this child, Boaz isn't praised for this child, Ruth isn't praised for this child, but rather the women of the town, which is always a dangerous thing, but the women of the town recognize, they recognize this is a work of the Lord and he deserves praise because of this great redemption. Something awesome. If you have bitter spots in your life, God's looking to make an Obed out of it. You have bitter spots in your life, God's looking to make an Obed. You need to simply open yourself up to the work that God is doing in your life to allow it to overflow into an Obed moment, a moment of praise unto Jesus because he is our Redeemer. Let's take a look at this. We have Ruth who leaves her old culture and becomes something new so that Naomi would have life. That Jesus leaves heaven and comes to earth so that we might have life. We have Boaz who purchases the land and has to give out money and energy and has to raise a baby. He has to lose sleep. But that Boaz pours himself out to purchase back something that was dead. That there was nothing left for Naomi. But rather he purchases back that which was dead so that it might have new life. You know that the bitter moments in your life that look like that there's nothing left there but death, that Jesus has purchased those moments back if you'll simply allow the Spirit to move in you and you would allow people that are close to you that love Jesus to be his hands and feet in your life. Naomi needed to accept Ruth. If you're in a place of bitterness, you need to accept a Ruth in your life that will come and be the hands and feet of Jesus for you. She needed to accept Boaz being the kinsman redeemer. Now, she was excited about that, obviously. But that Jesus is looking to do a redemptive work of your bitterness. He's looking to do a redemptive work of your bitterness. Will you go, "Don't call me pleasant. I ain't pleasant." That Jesus is looking to say, "I'm redeeming it, and it will end in my praise." What are those bitter moments in your life? What are those bitter things that you're holding on to? I want you to take a moment to allow the Spirit of God to simply probe your life. Go into the inner crevices of your heart. Go back in your memory. Or maybe it's something a whole lot more fresh for some of you, that maybe it's something that happened recently, but maybe not. Maybe it's something that happened years ago, maybe even decades ago, that there's this bitterness that you're holding on to, the words of a parent that were sharp and harsh that they never apologized for, the tormenting of a coworker or a schoolmate. Who knows? Maybe it was the careless words or actions of a spouse. Or maybe it was your own decision that now you're bitter against yourself because of the hastiness in which you made the decision. I want us to take a moment and I want us to just be as silent as we can. I know that silence is a challenge, but children, that also means you. To be silent in the moment. And just give the Spirit some space to speak to your life. Because the Mara, the bitterness of your life, the Spirit of God wants to bring to places of Obed, of praise.